Apollonius of Tyana, History or Fable? Adapted from the Rosicrucian Digest, April 1962, by Ben Finger, Jr. One of the most controversial figures in the history of antiquity was Apollonius of Tyana. Long derided by sectarians as a rival of Christianity, we discover here that he was a leading figure in the emergence of the Neo-Pythagorean movement in the first century of our era, and a magus in his own right, one of our links to the ancient Pythagorean mysteries.
In the first century of our era, there appeared at Tyana in Cappadocia one of the chief representatives of Neo-Pythagoreanism. Pupil of the Indian Brahmins, he related the mysteries of Pythagoras to the wisdom of the East and preached to the educated classes of his time a pagan but sincerely humanitarian religion. The name of this challenging Greek was Apollonius of Tyana. Born an aristocrat, he had given his patrimony to his relatives and traveled about like a poor monk. He brought knowledge of spiritual and moral truth to the courts of princes, for although the masses were seldom satisfied with philosophic subtleties, a philosophic religion appealed to the more intelligent. Apollonius has been characterized as a figure combining holiness with civilized behavior, humor with wisdom, fortitude with urbanity, and humaneness under extreme provocation. Associating with the mighty of his time, this teacher tried to persuade them that the bad live badly, even if they are prosperous. The true religious life, as he saw it, was to acquire wisdom and, so far as one can, do good to those who deserve it. Equating moral with social law, he hated the mere outward show of piety, which characterized the ceremonial religions of his time. Beneath the hypocritical veneer, he saw appalling materialism and bigotry. He had no patience with self-righteousness. He dismissed what we would call today dogmatic theology as a subject which transcends the power of humans. He visited the temples of many creeds, but above all the gods, he revered a supreme and unfathomable intelligence. His contemporaries tried to bribe the gods with bloody sacrifices, but he was content to receive with gratitude only what he really needed and deserved. Apollonius taught a yogic communion with the All, a Buddhistic message of the conquest of desire, and a Christ-like doctrine that people should live together without hatred and help one another. He was acclaimed the son of a god, but he never set himself above his companion initiates. The superstitious praised or feared him and called him a magician because he manifested extrasensory perception and healed stubborn illnesses, but he never claimed to be able to violate nature's laws. The evidence for parapsychology has convinced many today who are not supernaturalists. The effectiveness of Apollonius's therapy was the result of his thorough training as a physician and his sympathetic understanding of human character. Kindness and insight made him particularly successful as a psychiatrist, or exorcist of demons, to use the language of his age. Apollonius of Tyana, like many other ancient figures, is often written off as unhistorical because so many metaphors, mythic concepts, and allegories have been associated with his story. Although there is much plausible material which might very well be factual, it is without supporting evidence in contemporaneous literature. Those not versed in the symbolism of the mysteries are tempted to write off the whole biography of Apollonius as fictional. They misread the intent of the Annunciation. his divine origin, his exorcism of demons, his raising of the girl believed to be dead, his conversation with the dead, his power to make himself invisible and to walk through closed doors, his understanding of all languages without learning them, and his ascension. The memoirs of Apollonius, we are told, were written by his disciple Damas, who accompanied him on his journeys. The original memoirs are no longer extant. They remained suspiciously unnoticed from the 1st to the 3rd centuries, even though Apollonius had dramatic relationships with the emperors Nero and Domitian and was prominent in important places. Early in the 3rd century, the memoirs were reportedly given by the Empress Julia Domna, a patron of the arts, to an urbane literary man named Flavius Philostratus. Her husband, Septimius Severus, adorned his private chapel with busts of Apollonius, Jesus, Jupiter, Orpheus, and Abraham. In that eclectic atmosphere, Julia Domna is said to have persuaded Philostratus to translate the memoirs of Damas and to use them as his source in writing The Life of Apollonius of Tyana. An English translation of this work has been published in 2 volumes by Harvard University Press. Some scholars hold that Damas left no memoirs and that Philostratus merely invented a naive religious romance to while away the tedium of Julia Domna. Others concede the existence of the original source material, but feel that it was adorned by Philostratus to provide a pagan counterblast to the New Testament. Philostratus, certainly, was not inventing idle fiction for the sheer diversion of a sentimental reader when he dramatized the inner verities by way of parables and symbols. The present writer agrees with those who see an historical individual behind the mythic archetypes. In the life of Apollonius, a real character is unmistakably discerned, who must have been described in the first place by a contemporary who knew him intimately. If the mythic elements in his biography parallel the archetypes attached to other avatars, divine teachers, and apostles, it is because both have a common source in the mysteries. There is no reason to postulate borrowing with an ulterior purpose. In reading Philostratus's The Life of Apollonius, we must distinguish between the facts of his external career and the symbols and allegories pertaining to his inner life. The miraculous marvels of antiquity, some impossible in a literal sense, symbolize inner spiritual experience. Vital stages in the life of the Magus correspond to our own trials and triumphs in the ascent to universal consciousness. The lives of avatars display significant parallels. Apollonius, Buddha, Pythagoras, Krishna, Chaitanya, all were similar, not only in their visible services to humanity, but especially in their worldview, integration of character, pursuit of understanding, struggle with temptation, dedication, and sacrifice. They all brought the same divine ideal to their followers in the times and places allotted to them. Just before Apollonius was born, we read, his mother had a vision of the prophetic god Proteus, who informed her that he would incarnate in the child she would bear. Likewise, Plato's father and mother were reportedly notified by Apollo in a dream that their child would be virgin-born. In the mystic inner lives of adepts and avatars, all are divinely begotten saviors. This symbolizes their mystic birth during the mystery of initiation. The day of one's real birth is that on which one is born again into the world spiritually. All avatars have been, in the tradition of Hermetic philosophy, inspired by a way of life based upon cosmic consciousness rather than upon the petty strife of narrow, unaware egos. It is not surprising that the legend of raising the dead is a stock feature of the myth of the Magus. We are always dead to those truths of which we are not aware. Another traditional part of such mythic structures is that all avatars are threatened by an opposing power, the matter-centered world of glamour or illusion. This power is personified in the story of Apollonius by the figures of Nero, Domitian, and his Judas Euphrates. The protagonist must pass through the trials of initiation. He is tempted but triumphs over the kingdom of darkness. Accused of sedition and witchcraft, Apollonius was tempted to hide, but he came to Rome voluntarily to answer these charges before Domitian. He was imprisoned and persecuted, but he could not be cowed. This sophisticated avatar was fortunate enough to die a natural death, surrender a physical personality at an advanced age, but his followers said he returned to them glorified by spiritual birth and then ascended into heaven, the invisible brotherhood of the masters. The interstates are symbolized in the various dramatizations of the mysteries the world over as the degrees and trials of initiation. Apollonius, it is obvious, derived his name from the sun god Apollo, and the allegorical solar saga identified his trials with the 12 zodiacal signs. Even his travels, mystically described, personify a journey through the signs. When both the noumenal and empirical life of the avatar conform to a universal pattern prefigured in the heavens, the quest for his individual traits of personality and the facts of his objective career require careful study. The life of Apollonius by Philostratus not only outlines one life, but also elaborates it to symbolize the entire Hermetic philosophy. At the age of 14, Apollonius of Tyana was educated by Euthymedus in the world's leading university at Tarsus. He then studied in the peaceful neighboring town of Aigai, where he was privileged to dwell and study in the temple of Asclepius. At 16, he embraced the austere rule of the Pythagorean community, accepting the life of contemplation, self-examination, holiness, sobriety, and service. He adopted the vegetarian diet to honor the fact of universal kinship. He recognized reincarnation as a reality. For 5 years, he went through the Pythagorean discipline of silence, which our present age might profitably restore. When this discipline was completed, Philostratus notes, his words had a ring about them as of the dooms delivered by a sceptered king. The Tyanean seeker gave up his patrimony in order to travel lightly through life, but he traveled far and long. The description of his travels is allegorical. He went through a great part of Asia Minor to find his way to India in order to familiarize himself with the secret doctrines of the Brahmins, ex oriente lux. The journey to India symbolically represents the trials of a neophyte. Even though preternaturally wise, Apollonius had to travel widely to gain the arcane wisdom of the world. On the journey, he stayed for a time in Babylon, where he was introduced to the Magi. He found them wise, but not in all respects. The Chaldean way station on the journey to India represents a definite state of every aspirant's interior development. At length, Apollonius reached the court of King Phraortes in India, who recommended him to Iarchas, the oldest of the sages. The simplicity of the Indian palace, contrasting with the pomp of Babylon, was emblematic of a more austere philosophy. The Indian sages knew self-understanding to be the beginning of philosophy. Iarchas told Apollonius many details about his life and character, which could have been known only by intuition. The rites of initiation were symbolized by the well of testing, the fire of pardon, the jar of the rains, the jar of the winds, and the icons of the gods, the last symbolizing apotheosis through identification with the eternal archetypes. The Indian sages expressed profound doctrines of animism, reincarnation, divination, and therapy of the body and soul. A sound interpretation of his discourses with the Brahmins and their advice, together with his later dialogues with Menippus, yields the whole esoteric catechism. Apollonius's visit to the Empire of the Sages and his interview with their leader symbolize some of the deepest occult doctrines of our Hermetic heritage. When Apollonius returned from this pilgrimage, the wise respected his wisdom more than ever, and princes honored him as a superior when they entertained him at their courts. At Ephesus, the center of Greco-Roman worship, the adept reproved the people for their ignorance, idleness, arrogance, and noise. He advised the Smyrnians to take more pride in worthy people than in fine architecture. He rebuked the Athenians for their gory gladiatorial shows. The Lamia, or vampire from whom Apollonius saved young Menippus, is a symbol which relates to those concerned only with getting, never with giving. In Rome, the adept was arrested on the charge of impiety against Nero, but after questioning was released as a being too powerful to be controlled. His aid to Vindex in the western half of the empire was indeed a redoubt raised against Nero. We are told that Apollonius met the funeral procession of an aristocratic virgin, the daughter of a consul, apparently dead on her wedding day. He touched her, whereupon she arose and returned home. For this, notes the symbolic story, he was expelled from Rome. Predicting that Vespasian would be the sovereign of Rome, Apollonius gave him this good counsel. Gold lacks luster and is mere dross if it be wrung from human tears. When Apollonius visited an academy of sages near the bank of the Nile, he reminded the Egyptians of their debt to their Indian mentors and examined ancient institutions in a critical spirit. Continuing his journeys, the adept took a firm stand against the cruelty of the Emperor Domitian. His words were reported to that tyrant by his mortal enemy, Euphrates. Apollonius was accused of having participated in an insurrection against Domitian, but he appeared before the tribunal and was acquitted. Ultimately, he settled in Ephesus and there opened a Pythagorean school. He continued his philosophic teaching there until he died at about 100 years of age. He had traveled in Nineveh, Babylon, India, Spain, Africa, Greece, Italy, Egypt, and Persia. At last, having mastered the lore of the Magi, Brahmins, and the Egyptian ascetics, he settled in Ephesus as a humble teacher. He was credited with unparalleled thaumaturgical powers, but he claimed nothing beyond the natural magic of sincere seeking and constructive effort. The ancient world long distinguished between the Apolloni, white magicians, and the Pharisidae, black magicians. Perhaps the white magic of holiness and selfless service opened for Apollonius windows of insight which were closed to grosser natures.